and welcome to the December 2013 edition of The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. In the last week or so, we've had some near misses when it comes to icy weather conditions. On today's program, we throw the curtain back on the university's inclement weather plan and see what's going on behind the scenes to keep the university's community safe when the weather isn't. Later, it's time to revisit one of the guiding principles of this institution, diversity. But first, Dr. Jones, fall graduation is upon us.
That's right, Jared. And of course, we have three ceremonies a year. And actually, we have many ceremonies a year, but we do it on three different occasions. And our December graduation is turning into one of our largest. So we're anticipating a record number of graduates this fall. And in fact, we have for the first time, I believe ever, certainly in a long time, gone to four ceremonies. Usually for our large graduations, we have three ceremonies all on a Saturday. But this time the numbers are just so large that we're going to have our graduate ceremony on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock.
So this is really one of the first times, I think, in the history of this institution where graduation now takes 2 days.
Yes, yeah. It does take 2 days. And it's going to be two very action-packed days. They're going to be very busy.
Talk about what that means for an institution that it now requires a second day for everyone to walk across the stage.
Well, it's kind of a milestone for us. You know, I mean, if you go to A&M College Station or, you know, the big mega universities, you know, their graduations may stretch out over 3 days.
Right.
But at this institution, we've always been able to do it in 1 day, even with multiple ceremonies. So, again, it's kind of a watershed moment for us. We're getting so big that we just have to take our time and do it right.
Right.
Because it is such an important moment for these students. It's a symbolic ceremony, obviously, but we have so many guests for graduation. It has to do with our student body. So many of our students are the first in their family to attend college. Not all of them, but it's certainly a significant number of them. Our advanced graduates, you know, those receiving master's and doctoral degrees, some of them are just surprised to be walking because, you know, they were surprised when they found themselves in college in the first place. And so the idea of going on for a master's or a doctoral degree really was just sort of a fantasy. And for it all to come true and to walk across the stage and receive the hood and the diploma, it's just a magical moment. And families turn out. We have, on average, 10 to 12 guests for every one graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes it's much more than that. So we've had to, unfortunately, have to ticket attendance. We'll have to at our graduate ceremony, for sure.
Well, I know even as short time ago as a few years, there was the necessity for closed circuit television for those who couldn't
yes.
get tickets to the ceremony, which you've mentioned is very much for show. There isn't actually a requirement for the student to show up for graduation.
No.
It's really just a moment to sort of to highlight the fact that they've achieved this incredible accomplishment and that
right.
You know, it's the culmination of their time here, both in class and out of class and all the long hours. And I don't think there's any easy path
no.
you know, to a college degree. And so this is an opportunity to really sort of pay them the respect that they deserve.
Oh, my God, yes. And it's the recognition. You know, we've traditionally had a luncheon for our doctoral students, and they get a couple of minutes to sort of tell their story. And at the end of the luncheon, there's seldom a dry eye in the house because some of these doctoral students have worked so hard and so long, and life circumstances have intervened, and, you know, marriages and divorces and births and deaths and jobs and layoffs. And I mean, it's the whole range of human experience. But these people have persevered. They've achieved their dream. They're getting their doctorate, their family and their loved ones. It's for our doctoral students, it's both parents and children who show up.
Right.
Because so many of them have their youngsters in tow, and they talk about how they're really doing it for them and how much that support has meant to them. So, yeah, you're right. You don't have to come to graduation, but it's such a meaningful moment.
Right.
Why would you not?
Right. And there and the pictures to celebrate and the you know, the experience and the visiting with everyone. My favorite part of graduation was visiting with those folks who had been the teachers, the professors,
mm-hmm.
Immediately after, when everyone's outside in the robes and we're all sort of chatting at this point. It's like, okay, yeah, it's really over. Like, the hard stuff is
right.
is over, unless you want to keep going.
Right. You can always come back and get another degree.
That's
and,
right.
You know, and remembering back to my faculty days, I can remember that nothing is more gratifying than to see a student whose progress you have both observed and participated in take that walk across the stage. And it's the fulfillment of your professional identity.
Well, and you have a particularly personal moment like that coming up this time.
Yes, we do. We gave a little preview of this last month, but my son-in-law, Sean Ferrier Watson, will be receiving his doctorate at our graduate ceremony in December. So that'll be a proud moment for the entire family. And we're looking forward to, we don't know just quite when, but my daughter Allison is also in the doctoral program, so won't be too many semesters before she will be receiving hers as well. So don't expect the president to be dry-eyed at that point, okay?
Sure. So shifting gears a little bit, last week there was a threat of icy weather. I don't think that we're expecting icy weather for graduation, hopefully.
We don't expect it, but we do prepare for it.
Right, and we're constantly preparing for the safety of so many people involved with the university community. In fact, ice did cause a temporary outage for KETR last Monday when it coated the tip of the antenna. We had limited capacity for about an hour until we got that under control by literally tuning back the power so that it doesn't trip the breakers. But when the roadways become impassable, people start to look for closings and so forth.
Right.
A lot of young folks, I can remember when I was much younger, and I look forward to a snow day, you know, whenever you don't have to go to school. The fact is that people may not know that we've got personnel monitoring that weather situation long before anything starts to freeze, long before anything even really becomes a threat.
I know. Severe weather is, of course, a real possibility. It's more than a possibility. It's a reality here in North Texas.
Right.
We're kind of in the ice belt. We tend not to get the big snowstorms, although 2.5 years ago we got two big snowstorms.
Right.
Tornadoes and hurricanes. Tornadoes we get from time to time. Hurricanes are usually just big thunderstorms. But at this time of year, we can be in that part of a storm where you'll have a heavy rain followed by freezing temperatures, and of course that can be extremely hazardous.
Sure.
And I think that sometimes people may think that the decision to close the university is made 4:30 or 5 in the morning when the president rolls out of bed and looks out the window and says, it looks kind of bad today.
Right. It's easy to think that.
Yeah. But in fact, we do have a plan. We had our inclement weather group meet just last week. We do that every fall. We just go through our protocol, make sure that the right people are included in the communication loop and that the decision to close is timely and based on good information. This storm that we had recently came through. The threat was Sunday night going into Monday, but we have been tracking the progress of that storm since the previous Wednesday, and we have a very sophisticated emergency operations center here on campus that really is probably the most sophisticated one in Hunt County because we link in with all of the resources, National Weather Service, TxDOT, all of the television, Weather Channel and those kinds of
and
things.
And individual storm spotters that are out watching in real time, in person, watching the development of these storms.
Right. And once a storm is in motion, they can chart its course with incredible accuracy. A few days out, it's a little more difficult.
Right.
So we were tracking that storm from Wednesday on. All weekend long, I was getting updates, two or three times a day. I got the last update late Sunday evening. And at that point, it looked likely that we weren't going to have the freezing temperatures. But we were fully prepared to, have a conference call at 4 a.m. and make the decision if need be. And
right.
Fortunately, we dodged the bullet this time. But, winter's just getting underway.
Right.
So when it comes, we'll be ready for it.
Right. And we're fully aware, too, on the campus about the significance of our own reach and the fact that there are people, a lot of people who are driving in from a long way. All the students that attend here don't live right here on campus.
Right.
A lot of them are driving in from surrounding communities and sometimes, from as far away as Dallas or the other side of Dallas, if they don't have a full schedule, maybe they come on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The fact is, a lot of people are coming in from a long way away. A lot of the staff are coming in. They don't all live here in Commerce.
Right.
And so the safety of all of the folks who contribute to the success of the institution are obviously important. And for the community, when the community finds out, that the campus is closed for the day, maybe the community is able to make some decisions as
Absolutely.
Well. Obviously, we broadcast that information here on KETR, and I don't look to necessarily inflate the importance of KETR here. We really do just try to keep everyone informed, and we're trying to pass along the same sort of information because school districts around the area mm-hmm. kind of have to make the same decision. Anybody who's responsible to the public, you kind of have to make the same decisions in this inclement weather whenever right. something starts to happen. And so for all these folks, we're sort of relying on real stories and information as well as some of the very best, like you said, information available around the state
yeah.
as far as, you know, information coming in about weather. There are 3D models being looked at
in our
operations center. We're watching the storms for a long time, tracking the storms, access to information from the National Weather Service, the real-time discussion that those meteorologists are having to determine what's about to happen,
mm-hmm.
You know, what the threat that they think is going to happen. And we have access to that at the very last second. I think that's incredible. And the safety of everyone is obviously the utmost concern.
Absolutely.
In those scenarios.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. It's relatively easy for us to secure the campus in a severe weather situation. Our real concern is for those people who don't live on campus.
Right.
And they're, you know, the ones who live out in the country, those country roads can become very dangerous very quickly. So that's why it's important to make the call early. And we do get the word out. Obviously, KETR is one of the first media outlets to get the call. We have the IRIS alert system, and this is open to anyone. You can register your cell phone with the IRIS alert system and automatically receive a text message.
Right, and that's managed by the University Police Department.
Yes, managed by the University Police Department. We put notices up on the website, and we have a call-in number
that's
here
right,
at KETR.
903-886-5005, and that's the university's inclement weather line. You can find information when you call that number. If there are going to be any closings, that information will be there. That's updated as soon as that call is made
right.
about any closings for this campus or any of the campuses related to Texas A&M University Commerce. That has information and also tells you where to go for real and live updated information.
Yes.
So, but information is always available there at this moment. It sounds like this.
Thank you for calling the Texas A&M University Commerce inclement weather line. In the event of inclement weather, check back here to learn more about campus closures or other safety information. As always, find pertinent weather information by tuning your radio to 88.9.
Indicating that there's all things are open. Everything is a go right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And again, we always get a few calls after a closing say, well, I didn't know. And if you didn't know, tell us why.
Right.
Okay. Where did you go to for information and we're not able to obtain it? Because we want this to be as comprehensive and we want to cast as wide a net as possible and make sure that people get that information in a timely manner.
I think we continue to pass all tests and muster when it comes to safety, when,
yes.
especially with relation to inclement weather. So A&M Commerce, a very safe place to be.
It is. It is. Yeah. If you're going to have to be in a storm, come to campus.
Yeah, we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to discuss recent developments in the university's effort to foster a community of culture and inclusion in higher education. You're listening to The President's Perspective, only on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Support public radio in Northeast Texas today. KETR.org/support.
Welcome back to The President's Perspective. This is our once-a-month visit with the busy man who sits at the CEO's chair at TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. In 2010, your office shared with our institution 7 guiding principles. And listeners of this program who can access our online archive can literally go back in time to hear our series, which touched on each one in succession. Today, though, we learn about things on the front of diversity. The principle, as written, calls on us at this institution to foster a culture of inclusion which attracts to our university highly qualified students, faculty, and staff who represent the diversity of the region we serve and who will engage with us in the pursuit of our university's vision and mission.
That's right, Jared. Diversity is one of those, as you mentioned, it's one of our 7 guiding principles. It's number 5. They're not in rank order, but
right, sure.
it is number 5. And it's something that we really need to approach, I think, much more intentionally. Diversity doesn't just happen. It has to be woven into the fabric of the institution. It has to become part of the culture. It has to become part of who we are.
Right.
And I've been meeting with members of the faculty on this issue, hearing their views. And we also have a chief diversity officer on campus, Dr. Edward Romero, who is an incredibly bright student of this issue and really keeps up with the movements in diversity and how to achieve it and strategies. And I've learned so much just talking to him about the complexity of this whole issue, because a lot of us think of diversity as a fairly simple concept. Well, we just need to have better representation of underserved minorities, right? Okay.
Right.
Well, that is, in fact, one definition. I do think it's critical that our faculty and our staff reflect the demographic diversity of the region that we serve in terms of race, in terms of ethnicity. And again, you can run a checklist on these things, and it's fairly easy to keep that kind of a score. This was driven home to me yesterday, in fact, when I met with some of our African-American faculty, one of whom shared this observation. He said that he had spoken with one of his students who was graduating this December and was told that in this student's entire time on campus as a student here, this student had never had a course from an African-American faculty member. And I thought, that's not very good preparation for the world in which this student is going to have to compete.
Right.
Because obviously our culture, our society, our region is much more diverse than that. But as you delve a little more deeply into this issue, I think you quickly realize that that kind of diversity, which is made up of counting chairs around the table, essentially, while important, doesn't tell the whole story. Because ultimately the goal is to foster diversity of thought, diversity of perspective, diversity of cultural presence and cultural awareness, because that is so vital to our mission as an institution of higher education. This is a community of scholars. We are a community of both teachers and learners here. And new discoveries are not made by recycling old ideas.
Right.
You have to challenge yourself. And it's very difficult to challenge yourself because any one individual only knows what he or she knows. You know, I mean, I'm the product of my upbringing, the various experiences that I've had. I've learned certain things along the way. And when I, you know, delve into my reservoir of knowledge, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
And it's not what it's not. So when I can sit across the table with someone who has a very different collection of experiences, either as a product of a different culture, different socioeconomic status. You know, poor people see the world in very different ways than rich people. And it's not just a matter of, you know, we all live in the same world. It's just some of us have more and some of us have less. No, that affects the way you see the world.
Right.
That affects the way you process information. It affects the way you solve problems. So it's vital for each of us to be able to hear perspectives that are foreign to us, that in fact we can't even conceive of, we can't even imagine.
Right.
One of the faculty members at the meeting yesterday used the term cultural competence. I think that's a perfect term for what we're trying to achieve here. We need to challenge ourselves by putting ourselves in unfamiliar situations. We can't manufacture knowledge that we can't imagine. But we can put ourselves in situations where we feel a little bit out of place and a little bit uncomfortable because there's people around the table who know things and think differently than we do. And we can learn so much just by putting ourselves in that environment.
Right.
So I don't know, Jared, when you were here, what was your experience? Did you have faculty members from diverse cultures, diverse perspectives?
To be honest, we did have sort of the gamut, not necessarily with regard to race, but whenever we talk about backgrounds, I really sort of enjoyed the difference. I mean, you have folks, I don't ever want to add fuel to the fire with regard to the educational elite, but you have folks who are lifers in the world of academia, and then you have folks who kind of got into it later when you described doctorates that you'll be conferring
right.
earlier this episode, where you talked about this year, folks who had to work for it.
Right.
And those can oftentimes be very two different types of,
yes.
of professors. And so you learn differently based on sort of the background of the person who's teaching you. Sometimes it's an adjunct who is on a very fixed, income for the duration of their, and so it's just a different way to learn from somebody who kind of puts the importance on different things. things. But whenever you talk about the background being important, shaping your worldview, I mean, I don't know if we want to say anything as grand as a worldview, but something specific like how to tackle the problem of understanding X concept or Y concept. You know, if you have a baseline where you're very familiar with these concepts, educational diversity is going to be the biggest thing that we're talking about, mm-hmm. because maybe this student was exposed to concepts like these in high school, and so this is just one more way to do it. And maybe this student was focused on other things in high school. Maybe their backgrounds aren't that different. You know, maybe they're it isn't some other demographic difference that's at play here. Maybe it's just what they were prepared for when they came to the, you know, there's so many things, which is going to lead me to a question in just a moment. But I would like to think my experience at this institution as a student was very well rounded. Mm-hmm. I maybe put more weight myself on core coursework, toward my major. But whenever you're talking about capstone courses, when you're talking about, 100 level courses and 200 level courses throughout the institution, I think it was a very well rounded education, and I can speak more specifically to any of those things,
right.
if we had time.
If we had time. Had we but world enough in time.
Right.
You know, there's an article sitting on my desk that's called No Diversity? No Excellence. And to me, that was kind of a breakthrough notion for me, because diversity used to be viewed as a way of redressing past grievances.
Right.
You know, affirmative action, equal opportunity. And those are important things, obviously. Minority groups, underserved minorities in our country have not been treated fairly and have not been treated equitably. So we have a moral duty to try to address those injustices. Beyond that, however, we have a duty to our students to expose them to as wide a diversity of perspectives and experiences as we can, because it is from that diversity of thought that new ideas will spring, and that we truly will achieve excellence in education. When you think about the great discoveries in science, any field, pick your discipline, it didn't come from people who got really good at working the problems in the book.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly.
It came from people who were able to imagine new problems and new solutions. Thinking, the old tired old phrase, thinking outside the box. It's tired, but it's I guess lost some of its luster through overuse. But the idea of seeing things in new and different ways. Einstein had an expression, something on the lines of, the same mind which conceived a problem cannot also solve that problem. You have to be able to view it from a different perspective if you're going to be able to have those breakthrough moments. So that's why diversity is so important, and that's why it's one of those guiding principles of our university that I made a commitment to kind of bring to the fore in the next year or two.
Sure.
It's time for us to make progress on this. If we are continually to strive toward excellence, we have to recognize the complexity of our mission and the complexity of the strategies that are required to pursue that mission. And diversity underlies so many different principles that, again, it deserves our attention.
I think we'll have to make time for that in a later episode.
Okay.
I think we absolutely should revisit the issue.
Yes.
Dr. Jones, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jared.
This has been The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with Texas A&M University Commerce President Dr. Dan Jones. You can hear previous episodes of this program by visiting the archive on our website, ketr.org. While you're there, you can make a financial contribution in support of great regional radio programming. Other financial consideration for this program is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The President's Perspective is produced at KETR's Binion Hall Studios on the campus of and in association with Texas A&M University Commerce. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.